Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Talk Skills Podcast. My name is Cyril. Today, I'm joined by Billy. Say hello, Billy.
Hello, mate. You're right.
I'm good, mate. Say hello, Jake.
Hello, buddy.
Say hello, Jed.
Hello, mate. How are we doing?
That is attempt number, like, seven, folks, for that intro. We're just going to roll with it. Just going to roll right into the episode.
Can we just keep this one?
Yeah, just keep it. Jed's on, like, a fucking three-second delay. It's fine. I'm not going to come to him at all. He's just here for a face for the clips. Right, folks. Right, we're going to cover a couple of matches. Right, we're going to start with Arsenal-Bournemouth, because Arsenal are on fire just now. Playing very, very lovely football. I mean, the way they're playing, it just doesn't look like anybody can really stop them. This system just suits Gabriel Jesus to the absolute T. He's just so much service, and he offers so much to the players around him as well. I thought it was a great fixture. Jakey boy, good to come to you. What were your thoughts in the match?
Yeah, no, I thought Arsenal were fantastic. Jesus looks revitalised in Arsenal, doesn't he? I seen a tweet actually from someone, and he said, do you feel like Man City's style of play restricted him? And we're really seeing what Jesus is all about now. I definitely think that we are, because he looks fantastic in an Arsenal shirt. They were brilliant today. I know it's Bournemouth. We know they're relegation candidates, but you have to beat the people in front of you. And they did, it convincingly. And that's all really Arsenal fans can ask for.
Yeah, no easy games. I think, you know, something. I think people think that City's setup is a lot more creative than it actually is, but it actually feels way more disciplined than people actually think. And I think this Arsenal side, he's got the freedom to receive the ball. We can look immediately behind him. He's got Martin Odegaard, look to his left, Martinelli, look to his right. Bukayo Saka, you know, that's a couple of players to pick out. And then you add, like, players that can pick passes like Zinchenko and a creative force sort of role at that. I think, you know, they are really coming together. And even Ben White out right back. These opening three games, I wouldn't peg him for someone that's not a natural fullback. Ben White, really a standout candidate for me. And then the other thing for me that kind of set this game is the depth that Arsenal now have to bring on like a Tomiyasu, who finished this last season really, really strong, became a sort of key component to that Arsenal setup, who now can't get in the side. That shows that you're kind of going somewhere where good players can't get in the side. Kieran Tierney, another one, who actually, I don't know if you've noticed, Kieran Tierney actually just ended up playing on left wing. he's pressing, it's absolutely insane. He doesn't press like a four forwards, kind of, you know, they're just kind of trying to force the passes, you know, like sprinting to make the tackle. It's quite entertaining. Yeah, I thought it was absolutely terrific. Jedi boy, where do Arsenal finish this season?
I think third for me. Third. I think they look great at the moment, but can they sustain this level of performance over the course of the season? Yeah. Probably not. They're not going to go and win every game, are they? But they do look, for at the moment, they look absolutely solid. And I think that Jesus is a great addition to their side. Like Jake said, he has been sort of revitalized a little bit there. Seems like we're getting the real Jesus now, with a bit of more of a free reign to pick the ball up and take people on, etc. You're getting Zinchenko in the team. making a big difference as well. I think Saliba coming in has made a big difference to the back four. So there's loads of reasons to be positive for Arsenal. I think that if they don't finish in the top four, then they'll only have themselves to blame really this season.
I think, yeah, I totally agree. In our Premier League predictions, I had Arsenal in third as well. I really like to look at them, really like to look at the setup. I think one thing that's different this season as well is that Arsenal can actually probably, for the first time in a while, really afford a couple of injuries. Like, really afford a couple of injuries and still field a very, very good side and still be able to bring on players. Smith-Rowe is another one that escaped my mind earlier. The fact that he can't go on the pitch as well just shows that team is going places. Billy Boy, Arsenal, the managers of the club you support and the manager of the club at Arsenal is Mikel Arteta, Steven Gerrard. They share similarities in terms of they were big players. They achieved quite a lot in the game. And they're relatively new to management. Obviously, this is Mikel Arteta's first role. This is Steven Gerrard's second role. Mikel Arteta was split. The fan base was split 50-50 for Arsenal for about two and a half years, I want to say. We're 9 months into Steven Gerrard's reign at Aston Villa. Do you back him to do the same kind of project? We're looking at this Mikel Arteta side now. It looks like a slightly more fluid Man City, I would say. You know, a slightly more maybe creative for Man City. It's not quite the along the floor driven machine.
Yeah, I think that every player in that Arsenal squad just looks free to kind of play how you want to play, go out and do your job. And that's what they look like. And just getting back to your question about Steven Gerrard, should we back him, should we sack him, whatever. I'm still very much of the mindset that we do need to back him, because you look at what Mikel Arteta's done at Arsenal. And another example, even Graham Potter at Brighton, he's not got them playing like they are overnight. He had to struggle with the 16th and the 15th place finishes before he started to see some returning results. So I think we just need to be a little bit more patient, to be honest with you, because the way Arsenal are playing, I mean, it's like you said, they just look unbeatable. They just look such a solid team. I think that the addition of Saliba, who they obviously got quite a few years ago, and he's been out on loan in France and that, gaining a bit more experience, he just looks sensational, doesn't he? I mean, his goal topped it off for him. I wouldn't say it was quite as good as Callum Chambers' against Leeds last season, but it was up there. But what I liked about that goal actually was was Zinchenko's reaction. Did you see it? He just couldn't believe what he was watching. Just fell to his knees with his hands on his head.
You'll have to see it. That's the moments we kind of we watch for, isn't it? I will say this: I seen a couple of tweets today, right? Villa fans looking at Poch, wanting Pochettino. I mean, that's your Pochettino. As a replacement for Gerrard, big name manager. Obviously, we talked about this earlier today, Billy. You get quite wealthy owners. They're clearly backing whoever's in charge. They got some big players under Dean, and even bigger players under Gerrard. Would you take a Poch? What would your thoughts be in Poch?
It's a really tough one, because in a couple of months' time, Poch might not be there. A bit like Man United with Conte. Spurs realised that Conte was available. They went, bosh, we need to get him now. Got rid of Nuno and got in there before United even thought about it, really. And that's the trouble that you're getting in, because he's the only one out there at the minute, really. Only one of a high calibre that
gets you excited.
that has the possibility as well of Premier League experience, European experience, and knows what it takes to get there. And playing good football.
By the way,
I know
some people will say that Poch to Aston Villa isn't realistic. I think it absolutely is, 100% realistic. Yeah. We've seen Carlo Ancelotti at Everton. Poch to Villa is realistic.
Yeah, and as well, I think he's one of the only managers out there that would not put a... Like Boubacar Kamara, for example, who came because of Steven Gerrard.
Coutinho.
Pochettino's... One of the managers that they'd go, all right, maybe it didn't work out as the club wanted with Steven Gerrard. I'd have liked probably a little bit more time to work with him, but we've got Pochettino in now. Mm-hmm. He's a decent manager. He's done a lot in the game.
We're going to sign Messi.
I could see myself playing under Poch, see how we get on. Whereas if we Gerrard goes and, I don't know, maybe as big a name such as Pochettino isn't there, they're all of a sudden
that becomes
thinking,
an issue.
Well, yeah, I came for Gerrard here and 2 weeks into the season and he's gone. Like, what does that mean for me? Like, I'm not happy with this. And they may not get along with the next manager for whatever reason. So it's a really sticky situation because, in my opinion, we need to fully back Gerrard if that's what we want to do. Or we wipe our hands clean and go, look, Poch is available now. We need him, kind of thing. So it's one or the other. And you can't wait around because in this game, Leicester sack Rodgers, which isn't totally out of the question. Where does Poch go? Straight to Leicester.
Yeah.
It's such a dangerous game you're playing if you're not going to fully back the manager. It's either it's a now or never situation, really. Because he's there, he's attainable, we can get him, will we?
Listen, Rangers backed Steven Gerrard to do the almost impossible, which was to stop Celtic, which no one really backed me to. They said the gap was too wide. Celtic had too much time to build a squad. They had a good manager for a long, long time, Brendan Rodgers. And he did that. And I would back him 2 or 3 seasons.
This is the thing. You really need to give these managers time. It's like I said on the previous one.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You give these managers, you employ a young manager for the project ahead. And
if you want it now, you go and get a Conte. And Man United, no matter what Gary Neville says, Man United absolutely 100% needed Conte. We'll come on to Man United when we preview it a little bit. They 100% needed them. But we'll stay on the subject of Villa, because Palace, and I want to switch the conversation to Palace. Palace look excellent under Patrick Vieira. Speaking of exciting young coaches, and a player that I was a huge, huge fan of when he was playing, Patrick Vieira. Jed, come to you. You remember his playing days slightly. maybe not as well as me and Jake, but he's fantastic. What do you make of this Palace side? I know you're a big fan of him. You had Wilfried Zaha, you had Essie, it was Edouard, and your fantasy team. You kind of backed him to do well against Villa. You were right.
Yeah. I think I said a couple of weeks ago on the predictions podcast, I thought Palace would do pretty well this year. I have them finishing in the top 10. Might be a little bit optimistic, but I think that
certainly
that Palace team under Vieira, they're going the right way, aren't they? I think they're missing Conor Gallagher from last season, but they look like they've improved everywhere else, if that makes sense as well. Like they've got a good understanding between their defence and the keeper. Like the centre halves, I'm a big fan of Anderson, Gerhi. I like their attacking players. Obviously, you've got Zaha. You know what you're getting with him. You've got Eze back to fitness. Elise is really dangerous off the bench. Right. And then you've got your striker, Edouard and Mateta, etc. They'll come on and they'll get you goals. They're not going to get you 20 goals a season, but they're going to be reliable enough for a team like Palace. So I think that they're going in the right direction at the minute. And winning against teams like Villa and winning those games, that's what gets you up into the top half, isn't it?
It's where they
need
to
win. Beat the teams around you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think a lot of people maybe thought Zaha was bopping off slightly under Roy, but I think you put players like Eze, like Elise when he comes on, Edouard, even the new boy they've got in midfield, very good passer. The fullbacks, Doucouré, the fullbacks as well are very attacking minded fullbacks. I think you put those players around Wilfried Zaha, you allow Wilfried Zaha to do the things like he was like on a diff. I mean, I thought he played excellent against Liverpool, but if he'd found another gear against Liverpool, it would have been unplayable, absolutely unplayable. I think Palace are going to do really well this year. Zaha, if he stays fit for a full season, which he's capable of doing, 100% he's capable of doing that, I think he'll go in and have possibly one of his best seasons. Jakey boy, we're going to move on to Chelsea against Leeds. Okay, Jed mentioned Conor Gallagher. He said Palace are missing Conor Gallagher. I think Conor Gallagher's missing Palace. I think he's missing being that talisman player. What did you reckon? Mm. What did you think of him in that Chelsea shirt today?
It's a weird one because you can't really judge him on that. I mean, it's his first start, and Chelsea with their own downfall in this game. Mendy had a shocker, which is, I don't know, it's become a bit more frequent.
And a shocker.
It's starting to happen a bit more, which isn't good for them. But Leeds, I thought, were brilliant. Fantastic. You know,
they ran 6 kilometres more than Chelsea in just the first half.
Yeah, they pressed really well, and they looked good as well, and Rodrigo's on fire. You know, he's the top scorer in the league, I think, now. 4 goals this season, so he's looking good. And Jesse March, as you know, for all the criticism when he first came in, looks like he's got this side playing good football. And, you know, I think a few people maybe think we had Leeds to struggle potentially, and they look really good.
That Aronson that they brought in, he looks a proper player, don't he?
Yeah,
he really does look good. Like a really, really good player. He's still young, isn't he, as well? So he's got a hell of a future if he carries on playing the way he is at the minute. Just full of running, full of energy, and then when he gets on the ball, he's a bag of tricks, ain't he? It's class.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Really like the look of Leeds. Chelsea, though. Billy, what were the problems for Chelsea in this match?
All over the pitch. They just like you said there, they weren't... they just got run off the pitch. And you can't allow teams to do that to you in the Premier League. You saw it happen to United against Brentford last week. They won 4-0. So you've got to go one for one. You've got to be running the same amount. If Leeds are running 6 kilometres more in just the first half, that's embarrassing.
It's a problem.
It's a massive problem, yeah. And with players like Conor Gallagher and stuff, he's an energetic player, but he can't do it all himself, can he? So I think there's a lot of problems in there for Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel. And I just feel like that timer that we've mentioned before, you've mentioned in particular, Simo, with Thomas Tuchel is two and a half years at a club and all of a sudden it goes bang. Mm. I think it's ticking down.
He looked
and you already started to see it as well.
Shine again, didn't he? He saw what happened in the Spurs game, but
yeah,
it was again today. You know, he was just reacting to everything. He, like, you know, had a pop at Marsh a couple of times as well, and you think it's all right being all passionate and stuff, but when it's starting to be a detriment on the sideline, your players are looking at that as well and going, well, that is, can we stick behind a manager that's doing this all the time?
Well, that is just, I mean, a man who's,
he was lucky to be on a sideline. Very lucky to be on a sideline.
One thing I do have to say though is I think Leeds' goals were quite lucky, I've got to be honest with you.
I disagree. Disagree completely. You got to make that run. You got to press.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, you got to push that.
But on another day, Mendy boots that clear, or maybe keeps control of the possession or something. On another day, those goals, or particularly the first and the third, anyway, don't happen. Rodrigo gets a bit firmer of a touch on that, and it probably goes out for a goal kick. And Harrison's not there. I think the second goal, though, I mean, it's fantastic ball in. Reece James just not good enough, and Rodrigo beats into the header. And the first one, like I say, Mendy may just boot that away, may kick it out of play for a corner, does something, but don't give the ball away.
Carry on, Billy.
No, that was it, really. Credit to Leeds for making that press.
I think they made their own luck. They made their own luck. They put Mendy under that pressure. If you're sprinting to press a keeper, you know, and it doesn't look like you're going to get anything, Mendy suddenly thinks he's Ederson or Alisson. thinks he's Ederson or Alisson for a minute, kind of bought in his own hype a little bit and realised he absolutely looked like a goalkeeper with the ball at his feet. You know what I mean? I think Leeds were excellent. I mean, one thing I will say is, though, is Reece James does get caught out there. Reece James playing at centre back. I don't think if you were to ask him, do you want to be playing on the right side of the back three, I think he would say no. I don't think Loftus-Cheek was the worst player. I think he's the player to be blamed for this loss, but I don't think he's getting any business being on the pitch. You just play a back four. play a back four player, but put another man in midfield.
I don't think he's good enough to play.
I'll tell you what, Ruben Loftus-Cheek could do better at centre back than Reece James was, because he's got that. He's tall. He's
Reece James is an excellent full back, and I think
he's so dangerous.
Exactly. He proves what he can do in that position. Like you play. Surely you play your best player's strength, and he's among the best players at Chelsea.
If not the best, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an argument for that. There's definitely an argument for that, but I don't know. Well, I understand why he wants to play a back three, right? But you don't get your way every week, you know. Some Pep has to adapt sometimes, Klopp has to adapt sometimes. Not you don't get your way every single week, you know, and you need to adapt to these sort of things. I think he made the wrong decision to. I think he's making the wrong decision and sort of wasting an attacking outlet when he doesn't get any. There's Chelsea create chances, but they don't put them away. Maybe they create an extra chance with Reece James in a full-back position or a wing-back position. Or maybe he's the one that gets into the back post. Because, I mean, a lot of the danger created for Chelsea last season was, you know, Ben Chilwell to start the last season. They had an excellent start. Yeah. Reece James had a fantastic season last season.
That combination of Reece James and Ben Chilwell last year it was unplayable at times.
And I don't think Cucurella looked like a £60 million player today. He looked like a player that was maybe... I mean, I was Ben Chilwell on the bench. Is he injured?
He was on the bench. He came on. I think he's just got a little niggle.
I mean, right. The fair play, but I don't think he offered anywhere near as much as a Ben Chilwell.
But another thing, did Chelsea not have that Chalobah as well? So I've seen links of him coming to Villa, obviously, since Diego Carlos' injury, just on loan or something. He was decent. He was decent last season.
He's good. He's good.
Why not stick him at right centre back, where he got a couple of goals as well? I think, didn't he?
I think he. I think he played left centre back, left sided centre back for the majority of his starts.
Okay.
Last season, but just fine. I mean, you move Thiago out there, or you move Koulibaly. They're experienced players. They've both been playing centre back for a very long time. I'm sure they can step into an opposite side, and I'm sure Thiago Silva's played as a right sided centre back at some point. I'm going to go out and say that he must have done. Granted, he does like to be in a sort of the middle of that back three, but I think Tuchel got his team selection absolutely wrong today. And this is nothing against Loftus-Cheek. I would even say maybe just put him in the midfield, make him that extra body in midfield. He's done a lot of work as a central midfielder. He played as a central midfielder at Palace, where he probably had his best season, and he played as a central midfielder where he had a less good season at Fulham. but yeah, I think for me, shape is something Chelsea got wrong. I really played into Leeds' hands. Because every time Leeds were just happy to go into Chelsea's final third and just press absolutely everything, put everybody under pressure, really limit Chelsea's ability to get out.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But that's just my two cents, boys. Right, we'll move on though. And we'll finish up with sticking to the theme of seemingly looked upon opposition it's looked upon as lesser coming out to play a bigger side, which seems to be a theme for this season. A lot of the sort of mid to bottom third table sides are now pressing relentlessly, and that's what Newcastle did today against Manchester City. And you boys seem more of the match than me. I was changing a nappy for one of the goals, and I was making a bottle for the Kieran Tierney's red card, so I missed
Kieran
a wee
Tierney's.
Bit of the, Kieran Trippier's. The 6 hours of sleep I've had in the past 2 days, Sean. Yeah, excellent match though, and I think Newcastle did super well to not get disheartened by the conceding early. Because a lot of teams against City, they concede early, and the game kind of feels a bit out of sight for them. Newcastle were relentless. They're in the home ground. They should be relentless, as they were. Jed, I'll come to you, mate. Where do you land in this match?
I That was an absolute brilliant game of football from start to finish. It was one of them that had just about everything, didn't it? It had so many goals, some great football played, brilliant saves by Nick Pope, which really kept Newcastle in it at times. Honestly, I was just massively entertained throughout the whole thing. I thought that Alan Saint-Maximin for Newcastle was excellent. The way that he just ran at Man City and attacked them and had them sort of on the back foot at times, it looked like they couldn't handle him. And especially for the second goal where he just dribbles through the team, plays in Callum Wilson, and Wilson tucks it away with a beautiful little outside of the foot past Edison. I'm really, really impressed by that. On the flip side of that, I thought Man City were also very good. You can see what Haaland is in there for up front in that number nine role. He was dragging centre-backs left and right. When he got on the ball, he beat people. He held them off. He's big and strong, isn't he, and physical. He put in a real number nine shift for them, which I thought was really, really impressive as well.
Yeah.
I was just massively entertained by the whole game, start to finish. It was class.
I was, from what I've seen of it. I'm going to come to Jake for this because this is an observation I've made, and I don't know if many people agree with this, but I don't think the City players used Haaland enough. There's a chance early on Foden can square it to Haaland at 2-0, and then that game feels maybe a bit out of sight. And there's other times where Haaland could be used, but these City players are so used to just playing without a number nine that they're not, that square ball, the sense of the Aguero left, isn't really the one they go for. They tend to kind of cut in or, you know, find De Bruyne in a late injury, I think Gun coming in late into the box as he does. I don't think they're completely using Haaland to his ability. I mean, I kind of cast my mind back to when Van Persie made the move to Man United and Sir Alex rolled the dice that he would be the player to win them the league. And he made it very clear to all the players on the pitch, if they didn't pass to Ron Van Persie when he was open, they just wouldn't play. I think Pep maybe needs to kind of have a conversation with his players along those lines and say, like, but this is a big name signing. He can finish. He's seen what he can do. He scores. And he did have a fantastic game, but I think the players around him could have got more out of him. There's only so much he can do by making those runs, holding up that ball. I think he needs to be used more. But Jake, I want to come to you and see what your thoughts on that, because I'm not 100% set on it.
No, I think it's a good point. I think I agree with what you said about the players not being used to playing with a nine. It's something they haven't done for a while. So, you know, when Aguero and Haaland are completely different players anyway, you know, vastly, vastly different. So it'll take a bit of time to adjust to having that player. But I mean, if you score, I know they drew today, but if you're scoring three goals and you're not quite getting the most out of your number nine, is it a bad day at the office?
I think it's an okay day. I think Haaland played well.
It was the same with last week against Bournemouth. You know, everyone said he only had eight touches, but they won 4-0. So
yeah, bothered. You know,
it's just like the FPL, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. But a point I want to make is this just shows sort of what happens when you attack City as well. You know, if you actually go for City, they are quite vulnerable at times, and Newcastle showed that today. Not enough sides, especially the lower down sides. Mm-hmm. They're resigned to the fact that they're beaten before they even play.
When they line up with that back six, we're 4-4 or something.
Yeah. But, you know, Newcastle went for it. They gave the ball to Saint-Maximin. They said, go for it. And he did. And he took on the players, and, you know, he got a hat-trick of assists. And Newcastle looked fantastic. It just shows if you attack sides, then you can get at them. You know, playing 10 behind the ball against City, they will break you down eventually, yeah, especially now they've added Haaland.
You're consigned to your fate. I don't know why teams don't just go for it. Go for it. You better die on your feet than just to be, you know, like, concede one or two, but you've had 24% possession.
Especially at home. Especially at home. You know,
a shot. You know what I mean?
I mean, look what happened where they've ran at the City defence on the counter attack, essentially, after Man City have almost scored. So Pope's tipped a shot onto the post.
Yeah.
Counter attack up the other end. Saint-Maximin's running the defence, he gets fouled. They got a free kick then within 20 yards, and Trippier smashes it into the top corner. Like, that's all that some teams sometimes need against Man City, isn't it? Just a bit of a spark, get them in a dangerous position. And if you've got somebody like Trippier, or let's say it's a Ward-Prowse, for example, for Southampton, smacks the ball into the top corner, and then it's, there's a chance there. Yeah. And Newcastle, they fought for that point today, and they deserved the point in the end. I know, like I said, I think Nick Pope did keep them in it at times. And he made some really, really crucial saves. But they deserve that point. So all credit to them.
It reminds me of, I don't know if it was last season or the season before, but when Bielsa's Leeds just took the game to City. And at the time, nobody was really taking the game to City apart from Liverpool. Probably the only team, maybe Chelsea had a good game against City as well in that season, but Bielsa just tipped up these championship level players and took the game to
the
most expensive squad in the world, you know, and got a point. I don't think he won. I think he got a point and it was an excellent game. And I just think that's what teams need to start doing. If they want to get something for City, you know, I'm very much of the opinion, you know, die on your feet, go press, you know, this is the modern game now. That's what you've got to do. This whole sort of just maybe we'll nick one in and we'll put 10 behind the ball. It doesn't work. They're too good. They're too technical.
You got to play them at their own game, really, haven't you? You got to try and recover the ball quickly and press them, and you know, try and force them.
I think Newcastle today though that it works.
Yeah, it does work. It does work. Maybe it doesn't work every week, right? But it gives you a chance. Mm-hmm. I think
that's the thing. It's the fact that teams will think if we go out and play that kind of football against Man City, they can just pip us off, and it's going to be 4-0 before half time, and then you're getting into the mindset of, well, if we're a team that's going to be down there, goal difference is an extra point. So that's why people would rather sit back and lose maybe 2-0 than go out and lose 6-0 to Man City. Just as much as Man City can sit back against Man City and they can still beat you 5-6-0. But I think for teams that are down there, that's some of the thinking behind it, I think. And I mean, Man City can batter anyone 5-6-0 on their day, probably barring Liverpool. But it's, you just have to get them on the right day, which Newcastle did. Also, when I looked at the Man City lineup, I thought it didn't really look like a Man City lineup, as mad as that sounds. I think I saw Stones and Ake line up for them at the back, and my first thought was that's just given Newcastle an opportunity wide open because of how far forward the fullbacks get as well. Saint-Maximin, Wilson, he just needs one chance to score. So I always thought, as soon as I saw the lineup, that it was going to be a tough game for Man City, and turned out that it was.
But that's it. They're going to be playing Ake and Stones a lot more, so teams must look at this now and go, you know, we can get at them, especially if we counter-attack. Yeah. You know, you'd fancy most mid-table wingers against Nathan Ake and John Stones. You would, you know, it is.
Yeah.
I mean,
and a one-on-one.
Leon Bailey against them, you'd fancy him every day of the week.
Yeah.
Up against them. So teams must be looking at that now, seeing that team come out and thinking, well, you know, there could be a chance here.
Next game for Man City, incidentally, is Palace. Watching that today, Palace will absolutely be thinking along them lines.
Yeah.
They always
they'll be looking at Newcastle and thinking, we are as fit as them. Our quality, maybe not quite the level of Newcastle, but we are as fit as them. We can run as much as them.
I think that Palace side, maybe at the back. Maybe at the back, I'm probably talking just Nathaniel Clyne or Joel Ward or whoever they had.
He was good on his day, Nathaniel Clyne. Yeah. He was good on his day. Somebody fucking broke his spine or something.
But yeah, I think that Palace side are very good. And that'll be a game to watch out for, the Palace Newcastle.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That'll be a good fight. You're a good point there, Billy. That'll be a good fight still.
Yeah, I do think that Palace, as they always seem to do, I think they could get something out of this Man City side. But likewise, like I've literally just mentioned, City could also go and batter them 5-6.
That's always going to be on the cards when you try to take the game of City. But roll the dice. Roll the dice. Be brave. Boys, let's preview the Monday night football. It's a historic fixture. We've got Liverpool and Manchester United. Am I worried?
Relegation six-pointer, isn't it?
Yeah, relegation six-pointer as it stands.
after the action this weekend, it's got 0-0 written all over it.
Exactly, yeah. Everything in me says that Liverpool should destroy this Manchester United sign from just how disjointed they are. I mean, they're torn apart by, you know, Brentford. And I think the tools that Liverpool have available to them should just absolutely dismantle that back line. No questions asked. But it's a derby, and they're judged in isolation. And Ronaldo could start and score a hat-trick. He just needs, and he could have three chances all game and score a hat-trick. And that's, and that, you know, it's, there's a lot of what-ifs, and I am nervous about it. Jake, where are you landing on this? I am a little bit nervous about it.
Yeah, always. It's one of the biggest games of the season. But yeah, I'm nervous. You know, with the fact that the likes of Thiago and things like that are out as well isn't always good. Jota, he's such a key player when he's on the pitch. You know, Bobby's back, thankfully.
Thank God.
You know, but if Salah can find his boots, and if Diaz, you know, is as good as, you know, is half as good as he was against Palace, he could have a good day. But it just depends how we turn up, really. United are such a weird side, because they could turn up and this could be their springboard now for the rest of the season. You know, they could quite happily turn up and have a good game against Liverpool. But
yeah,
I don't know. You'd like to think that we are going to beat United, but it's a derby, like you said. Form, not that either side is in form, but form goes out the window.
Yeah. Well, both teams heavily needed a bounce.
They both need a win.
So we'll see. Jed, come to you, mate. What, give us the neutral point of view.
So on paper, you'd say Liverpool are the favourites. Obviously, I do think Liverpool are going to win the game, but at the same time, there's a little voice in the back of my head saying, this is just going to be one of those Man United things where they just come back. They have a bounce. You know, it's the start of the Ten Hag revolution or whatever there, you know, and they go and snatch like a scrappy 2-1 win. And it's just, you know, it's typical, isn't it? I can see that happening, but I do think that Liverpool will win because, yeah, I think Liverpool are a better side. There's Man United have been so poor so far this season that if Liverpool don't beat them, that's a failure as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, even if it is a derby, you know, you look what they did in the derby against them last year.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
I think that they're well versed in that sort of, you know, it's a derby game now. They're ready for it.
I think we have to use the discontent that's around City now, isn't United it? As well to really cause more issues. You know, the fans.
This is if the game even goes ahead.
You know, the fans are already talking about rioting outside the ground. But if it does go ahead, it's the game to really rubber stamp that. There you go, something wrong here.
Yeah, yeah. Billy, Erik ten Hag. I don't think the players are behind him. I think he should have had way more outgoings. I know he did have some.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of players that should have, could have left the club. Need to leave the club. I think he's in a tough spot. But do you see this working out for him? Just before I come to you, Billy, actually, I talked about Conte, and that's how I think that's the manager they need. They need that fucking debt charge that just blows the dressing room apart. That's a Jose Mourinho. Jose Mourinho had success at Manchester United, even though. And when he came out,
he says now, doesn't he? The biggest best success thing he did.
Was get second with that team. And then he left, and it just went from bad to worse to terrible to. Yeah. And I don't think Ten Hag is that sort of like, a Conte goes in there and he rips everybody apart. It's, you know, you don't want that guy screaming at you, especially if, because there's times where you think, you're looking at Manchester United players, you think you're just not putting an effort. There's just no effort. You're getting outrun all over the pitches. You're 3-0 down against Brentford and you're just getting outrun, you know? If you can't find a yard to add to your game.
You know what I think about Ten Hag? I think he's not, like you say, he's not the shouter and screamer. He doesn't go in and give people the hairdryer. He's more of like a thinker. I reckon he tries to get inside players' heads and just like, they're just sitting in the dressing room and he's just staring at someone like that.
You know, sort of how did I get Luke Shaw to stop eating?
And they're sitting there. And they're sitting there. And their players sitting there thinking, what is he thinking about me? What's he going to do? What's going on? I reckon that's how he gets into our players' heads. He just thinks them. He outthinks them.
You've just put a funny picture in my head of like Maguire sat there looking at Ten Hag thinking, what is he thinking? And it cuts to Ten Hag's brain and he's thinking, his head is fucking massive. How does he even run with that head? How does he even get about the pitch?
Spoiler, he doesn't.
Oh man, I think he's a great manager. I do. I think he would be in the job if he wasn't. He wouldn't have had the success at Ajax that he had. I've put together that great team he put together. They just got absolutely picked apart by all the big clubs in Europe. I don't know. I just don't think that's what they needed. I think Gary Neville, it's just his they didn't get Conte, and he all of a sudden comes out that he doesn't want Conte. And you see exactly the turnaround. That Spurs team was on its fucking knees, on its absolute knees, and he just wasn't having it. He was much. He's one of the managers that lets you know if he's not happy right away. There's no.
He lets everyone else know as well.
Yeah, you could see it in the post match, and I bet and players have talked about what he's like behind the scenes and just this crazy stuff that he demands of his players. You know, I'm a big fan, Antonio Conte. The CV speaks
for
itself.
The ultimate thing.
But he's a lunatic, right? He's a bit of a lunatic, and he only lasts normally about two or three seasons. Max, if everything goes well, he'll get that amount of time. But he's well capable of, you know, coming into a Chelsea, winning the league, and getting sacked. Fucking, you know, like six months later. He's capable. He's that kind of manager. Jose Mourinho is that kind of manager. He just drops into Roma, wins a European Cup. He's fucking murals of him everywhere. You know, they are very much that sort of like. I think if you need a hard reset in your club, like a real change in culture. That you need to drop that manager that can. Don't you go, Jed?
Can I just ask a question about just unrelated to Conte and the management? But you mentioned earlier that the United fans are planning on like protesting outside the ground against the owners. Is that right? Like to try and stop the game or something?
Yes, as they did last season.
I get that United fans are a bit like annoyed with the Glazers and there's all this thing that they don't put any money into the club, etc. But like, do they need to put money into the club? They make however many billions of pounds a year. Like it must be a pretty easy situation for somebody if your club's already making you billions to just reinvest that money rather than put your own money into it.
Like, a lot of the noise I hear is that they want new owners to come in to invest, right? To invest money into it.
But then they're already spending into the right areas.
Yeah.
Who buys Man United if not like a Man City type oil tycoon owner? And then is that what they want? Because they've been slating, you know, Man City for that for the last 10 years. So is that what they want? Or who do they want? Like what's the alternative to the Glazers who are still going to go out and spend however many millions on transfers and stuff like that? It's not the way that it's all I hear about it is that they're not putting any money into the club, etc. But no, they don't need one. They don't need to, and two, they're not maybe buying the right players or bringing the right people in, etc. It's something else that needs to change. It's not where the money's coming from, surely. Because you know, Man United could probably have no owner and still run itself. You know,
they should be making the noise of we need someone to come in and run the club better. Run the club better. Yeah, the money is spent.
Businessmen making footballing decisions at the end of the day. And it's just destined for failure. If they bring
football minds in, then
they're going to go somewhere. It's the same with every club in the UK, in the world. You're not going to go anywhere with a business mind running that football club.
From what I understand, but
if you're the owner of Man City, why do you want to sell that club though? Like, why would you want to sell Man United?
They don't even have to
put their own money into it. So
yeah. I think they want $5 billion. It's a price tag I'm seeing floating around.
If I was the owners of Man United, I'd be sitting there thinking, yeah, I'd never need to sell this club. It's always going to make money because it's such a big global thing, isn't it? Man United,
they're a powerhouse.
It makes back however much money. They don't have to. They don't have to invest anything because they just run off the profits the club makes on everything else.
Yeah,
so like
the Glazers,
and that's just on its name alone and its reputation. So like, why would they need to sell it? Even if the fans hate them, like I don't think protesting actually gets United fans anywhere. To be honest,
I think the best owners just exist in the background. From what I understand, Man City's owners just give Pep what he wants and he delivers everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apart from that one trophy that keeps escaping them. He delivers. He just delivers consistently. Even you see Kroenke's,
the right minds in the right area, the right people in the right area. They're a well-run club in that aspect of the game. Yeah. They're bringing in the players that Pep Guardiola wants for whatever reason it may be. Whereas it doesn't seem like that's being made at United. In Casemiro at what, £400,000 a week for 4 years?
They need to stop doing that.
It's just ridiculous. Man. No wonder he wants to go to United. I think anyone would go for United for that kind of money. But
yeah,
you're gonna turn into.
This is what makes me
just another.
This is what annoys me most about Premier League fans when they protest their owners and stuff like that. It's like, oh, we want the club to be run better, but at the same time, we're still signing players on £400,000 a week wages and stuff like that, and they're going to protest the game, you know, on the grounds that they've lost two games at the start of the season. Like, my club's only played two games at the start of the season because we haven't got a pitch, because our landlords cut the fucking pitch up. Like, they've cut the pitch up with the Commonwealth Games and not replaced it. So, like, what, like, I'd love to have played for lost two or whatever, you know, but I can't even go to my game to protest it because there's no fucking game on there. Like, there's no perspective at all. Outside the Man United fans, there's no perspective whatsoever. That just, as a football fan, just pisses me off, because it's like,
I will say though,
you need to realise, like, how lucky you've got it, you know, yeah, at the end of the day.
I mean, you can look at Mike Ashley. Mike Ashley was that living nightmare for Newcastle. That was a man that was just taking money off football club. Just, oh, I want to go buy John Lewis. You know what I mean? Like, fucking doing some mad shit. Fucking put a big Sports Direct sign on stadium. And I did not give a fuck. I was like, I'm going to go one game this season. You know, I'm not telling anybody when I'm going, and I'll fucking hide somewhere. But I mean, he's absolute garbage of a person, but you know, he did what he did. But what I will say is that there is an element of jobs for the boys at Manchester United. There's a lot of people at Manchester United that are quite obviously not doing their fucking job as they should do it and not getting sacked. I mean, how long did it take Ed Woodward to get sacked? Even though, like, he was making decisions that were maybe not great for football, and he delivered on revenue every year, so he kept his job. It was only after a lot of noise that they replaced him. But see, the Saudis own Man City, you know, it's something that's not doing your job, sacked, you know. if Pep wasn't delivering consistently every season, he'd be sacked, they'd bring in the next guy, and he would do it. They would run all the back through him, would be perfect. If they were failing in certain areas, they'd be sacked. There's no element, I don't think they have, the owners of Manchester City have any sort of attachment to who works for them. I think they see them as employees, whereas Manchester United, I do think there's an element of just, like, jobs for the boys there. I think
he's been here for 12 years already. He can't leave.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
where's he go? Like,
yeah. You know, I mean, within its limits, I mean, actual key positions, you know, technical director, director of footballs, these sort of positions is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the kit man that's been there 30 years getting sacked because he fucking spelt Ronaldo wrong or something. You know, I don't agree with that. Like, I'm a union man.
Why don't you just stick Gary Neville in there, make him sell Salford so it's not a conflict of interest or whatever, and just put him in there and then just let him go on, let him get on, like, and do something for a year and see how it goes. Because, like, I'm just sick of hearing it on Sky now as well. Every time Man United lose, it's like, for God's sake, just change the record, man. Go and do something about it yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Right, boys. Anything else to add?
I don't think so, mate.
I think that is going to do us. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for the listeners. Please download and follow wherever you're getting this podcast from. And we shall see you on the next one. We're back later this week with our FPL show, and maybe an extra episode as well, depending on what we can fit in. But until then, cheerio, bye. Sports Social Podcast
Network. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.